Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers. And as you might have guessed, I brought along one of my very special friends, Dr. Richard Presser.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening to you, Richard. Well, one of the things that is going to happen today is we're going to be talking about soulmates, twin flames, angels. And the reason that I chose those topics is because I've been getting email about these topics, and I thought it would be a very enlightening thing to talk about it. People are always looking for love, aren't they, on some plane? And, of course, they're looking for a soulmate or a twin flame, whichever comes first. So I've gotten a lot of questions about that. But I'm going to divert a little bit from that subject matter and discuss something else first, because we don't always understand what our lives are about. As I have come to believe from working with people on our conference calls, is our lives are really about relationships and forgotten skills that we had at one time. And I've come to this conclusion because of Richard's work, particularly. Richard's done an awful lot of work with relationships with regards to his soul healing work. Before I begin about that topic, Richard, did you want to say one word or two, maybe even three, about what you have discovered with regards to relationships? Good, bad, or indifferent?
Well, I would agree with you. I think so often, so much of what we experience in life is expressed through relationships in one way or another. I mean, ultimately, so much of what we do in life involves relationship on one level or another, whether it be with the people that we choose to share our lives with, if we choose to do that, or people that we consider as friends or colleagues, or those that we work with on some level or another. It's inevitably such an important aspect of life. Figuring out, for example, why individuals might be in our lives, or why it is we have conflicts of one sort or another, why we feel such incredible attraction to some people in our lives. So it is such a powerful force.
And something that I really have come to believe, Richard, is that most of us don't really understand these relationships. We don't understand what is moving behind them. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Well, some of the things that I have come across is that sometimes in a past lifetime, a person has done a terrible deed to us, and we meet them again in this lifetime to give them an opportunity to heal. Such a magnificent thing. I have a good friend who remembers a lot of her lifetimes. And you see, it is such an advantage to be able to remember past lives, or to be able to work with the skill of connecting with past lifetimes. And this lady remembered a past lifetime where her family and she were brutally killed by soldiers who were ravaging the countryside. And it so happens that she remembers that the soldier who led the raid, so to speak, is her father now. And so, because of this, she has understood how she feels about her father, how he has treated her, and she also knows that she and her mother gave this gentleman the opportunity to come and heal this relationship. Now, just imagine for a second if she didn't understand that, how difficult it would be for her to try to live with an individual where she might not remember consciously, but there is that memory below the conscious level. And I feel that this is something that drives relationships. And so because she has this understanding, she is in such a better place. I know in my own life, there is an individual in my life that I couldn't understand how much he hated me. And going through the past lifetimes, I realized that many times he had killed me or either treated me in such a way that was abominable. And I traced it all the way to a very ancient lifetime when all of this hostility began. And in that lifetime, people didn't marry. They had children, but the children were the responsibility of, you might say, the tribe that people lived with. And as a mother who had a lot of children and had no support from the tribe, I couldn't even feed my children. And this is really hard for us to understand now, and even hard for me to accept at first. But I had sold one of the children to someone else to be able to feed my children, to have the other children, to have the money to feed, or what would be considered money then. And I sold that particular child because he was the strongest and I knew he would survive. And all he thought of was hatred for me because he had a very difficult time in the environment that he found himself. And so this triggered all of these lifetimes where you might say he was getting back at me. And at the end of my life, he came back and killed me in that very primitive lifetime. And when you become aware of these things, it is much easier to understand what motivated people, what moved them, and they needed healing. And for whatever reason, they did not accept it. And you see, these sort of things can be discovered in a couple ways. One of them is to be able to work with the right side of the brain and to connect to consciousness. Richard, what is your opinion of that? Working with the right side of the brain, becoming conscious of so many things that surround us and awaken us. What has been your opinion?
Well, I've just come to understand it as being such an important aspect of the journey of this lifetime in particular. Speaking from my own experience, as you know, Carolyn, and perhaps some of those listening do, I grew up with a scientific training. I have an engineering degree. In fact, I have a PhD in engineering, and also worked in a business environment for many years, most of which encourages left brain thinking. And I realized in looking back on my life that perhaps, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago now, I made some choices, not on a conscious level, which led me to really have no choice but to operate from the right side of my brain, to work from an intuitive perspective in the choices that I made in my life, which was incredibly difficult for me because I'd never done this. It's not the way I'd operated, in a conscious manner anyway. And so today, I really use both aspects, but above all else, I follow that intuitive guidance, and I realize that had I not done that, my life would have turned out very, very differently from how it is today. And for me, that intuitive guidance is just such an important aspect of life in general, and so much in the work that I do, working with people on many levels, I follow that intuitive guidance. Not always that I do things that the other people necessarily agree with, but I know that I'm following my guidance in those things, and it's so powerful. And when I work with people, I can see those people that have begun to open up these abilities, that have begun to trust this intuitive side, this right brain side of our skills and abilities, and of course learning to communicate with beings on the other side of the veil requires these kind of skills to be awakened. So it's such an important aspect of life, and something that Carolyn and I have come to understand in our work is that before the fall in Atlantis, the left brain was not the dominant partner that it's been encouraged to be in this time. It was very much the servant rather than the master it has become in this time. And so this reactivating and trusting of this right brain prompting, if you will, as you go through life is really the way we were meant to live life. But we've been encouraged to do other than this for many, many reasons and in many different ways.
And you're very good at that, Richard. But I kind of was asking that question from another perspective. What you're saying is absolutely true. But I was looking at it from the perspective of when we open up our awareness to other consciousness, what we are able to bring back. And I don't know if you have anything that you want to say about that.
I'm not exactly sure to what you're referring, Carolyn, in terms
like
of getting...
If we talk to a rock or a tree and they can tell us about the history of the area.
It's extraordinary, the things that you can do if you trust the truth of that ability. It's pretty amazing what can be achieved and the information that you can get. I mean, the work that Carolyn and I do day to day relies enormously on those abilities. We would not be doing what we are doing. Carolyn probably would not be here if we didn't rely on those skills. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I'd be flying that plane in the great beyond, huh?
I reckon.
Well, from the point of view of remembering past lifetimes, working from the right side of the brain, going within and following that strand, that string of those individuals that you have been through different incarnation works very well. And so our lives really are about relationships and about understanding those relationships and being able to follow our path, what we have been in the past incarnations and what we have come to do in this incarnation, which is extraordinarily helpful. Now, I also talked about our lives are all about relationships and also forgotten skills. And working with people, taking them to a past lifetime that their soul has chosen, a key past lifetime. I do a lot of that work, and it is quite remarkable what the soul decides that it wants an individual to remember. And what we do is we literally take them to that past lifetime, and they communicate with an individual that their soul chose. And something that I have learned about that, we think that perhaps things are working on a gradual basis, that we start out through understanding, and each lifetime we come and we grow and we our skills become greater. Well, that is true to a certain extent. But what I have found is that some of these key past lifetimes that we have gone to or held the space or helped people to get into that past lifetime, they had very great skills, even greater than what they hold today. And Richard, is there any one of those that you particularly find very interesting?
Of those key past life sessions?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to single them out, Carolyn. Man, they've been incredible. I mean, it's just some of the most amazing work that we do. I just sit spellbound listening to these things unfold so often. They're quite extraordinary. I mean, individuals finding that they've been very powerful healers in past lives where that aspect has connected with them through this session so that they can reconnect with those skills and bring those skills forth in this lifetime. so many examples of this nature, individuals that have been important and powerful historical figures, whether they've been an earth goddess with a name that's known or a name that's not, or someone that's known from biblical times and so on. These stories, these experiences are quite extraordinary. It's hard to single them out, really. Just amazing experiences. And I find it fascinating. So often these individuals come to these sessions with really no experience of doing this kind of thing, but with a little prompting and guidance from Carolyn and some beautiful hand-holding, these doors begin to open. It's just amazing to watch this.
And what I find so fascinating is when these individuals look into a past lifetime at an individual that they were and look into their eyes. I always find that so fascinating. And what happens many times is that the individuals that they connect with a past lifetime agrees to come and work with them presently so that they start to remember their skills and use their skills. And we look at, well, what are we here for? What are we supposed to be doing? And to be able to open that door and remember those past skills and work with a past life entity is so remarkable. Now, I'm discussing these things because I think if someone can do this work and understand these things, it clears so much to understand who they are, where they've come from, who they have worked with, and in a sense, I think some of that understanding has to be in place before you can really start considering working with a soulmate or a twin flame. Now, I say that because two individuals coming together on whatever level have to be spiritually healed enough to be able to make that relationship work. I have seen some relationships who were soulmates who could not stand the intensity of the relationship because one was not healed enough to work with the other one. All of this is about healing. And so something that I would like to say to people who are waiting for their soulmate or their twin flame, and we'll get into that a little bit and discuss what that might be. They should be thinking first about their own healing. And, you know, that's a word that we use a lot, our own healing. Well, what annoys you about people? If we start thinking about that, you know, what are the triggers? What does somebody say something to me and I get really upset about it? Have I had a relationship in the past where it just didn't work? Well, what were the reasons? What did I need to heal to make the relationship work? And I do believe this is very important to try to attract a soulmate or a twin flame and not be healed, to be carrying some of these attitudes that close you to love and companionship and compassion for another person. You see, these things are so important. Two people might come together and one, maybe both, need healing in certain areas, and you have to recognize that. Richard, did you have any sense of what I'm saying with regards to people being able to be open and to share love?
Very much so. I think it's a great challenge for so many people in relationships. I think all of us have come into this life needing healing on one level or another, and so taking responsibility for our own healing to begin with, and secondly, doing that within the context of a relationship where the individual that we are in relationship with almost inevitably is someone we have interacted with in a past life, and so there are issues that are being triggered through that relationship, or even if we haven't, they've been drawn to us inevitably in part because they can serve us in this way, to point us to things that need to be healed. And most people have no clue about this as they go about the living of life. And so it's just such an important thing to begin to understand and to have to build the understanding if you can, and then have the courage to live that truth, to undertake your own healing in the context of that relationship, and then perhaps support that other individual to heal. And if not, then have the courage to recognize that that relationship has served its purpose and it's time to move on. So it's a challenging process and so much an important part of life.
Indeed. And I see people who are in pain. You know, if you are in pain and you are in a relationship and the relationship is causing you pain, that to me is the first sign that something needs healing. And if it needs healing, start with yourself first. What am I doing that is interfering with this relationship? So many times people look at the other one and start complaining about something that the other person is doing. And my experience has been that people respond to you in a manner in which you treat them. Would you agree with that, Richard?
Well, certainly that's important. I can't say that's always true. When you have an individual that has a powerful karmic drive, which might have them be pretty committed to being in conflict with us, but in general, that's very much so. You know, if you are willing to be open and to practice active listening with someone and so on, it makes such a difference. Certainly people, for the most part, react to that in a very positive way.
I love that phrase, active listening. I know this might sound silly for me to even ask you this, Richard, but it really is for other people who perhaps might be listening to this, because I'm not sure that there are a lot of people that understand what active listening is. Could you talk about that a little? To you,
sure.
What is active listening?
Firstly, if you monitor most conversations between two or more people, for the most part, people are listening to the other person long enough such that they perhaps get to finish what they're saying, and then that other individual jumps in with what they want to say. And it doesn't really matter whether there's emotion attached to the conversation or not, but especially when there's emotion attached, when people are feeling attacked or wounded or they're angry and so on, that kind of listening for what the other person has actually said before you begin to reply is such a rare skill. It's not something that we're taught as children. And so it's a very powerful process when, regardless of the circumstances, when somebody has something to say, that you stop and then reflect back to them what they have said to you. Not that you agree with it, not that you are parroting back their words, but that you are just repeating your understanding of what they've said. Now, when you do that, that person feels like they have been valued, that they have been heard. And if you have misunderstood what they've said, then they will come back and repeat or speak, repeat it in a somewhat different manner so that they ensure that you've understood what they have said. But what this immediately does is that it lowers the emotion in the situation, and frankly, it helps your understanding. Your jumping in and saying what you have to say over the top of what they're saying just feeds the emotion in the situation and does nothing to generate resolution. And half the problem is because we haven't actually stopped to listen and to understand what that individual has said. And so when somebody says something to us, if it's important, then you can play it back to them by saying something like, "So what I understand you to say is this." And you see, it puts you in a completely different position because you've taken responsibility for hearing what that other person has said before you move on. And it's such a powerful process for them and for you because then you are responding to what they have said. And when you respond, they know that you have actually heard what they have said. And so your response is in response to what they have said rather than you just dumping back at them, which is such, you know, a very destructive and frankly very normal process by which people speak. So that in simple terms is active listening.
I agree entirely with what you're saying. And I'd like to perhaps even go a little step further. There are some people, they're not even listening to what at all what the person is saying. They are thinking of their response to it without even hearing what the other person has said.
For sure.
Yeah. So if you're going to have a relationship with a soulmate, these are some of the things that you have to heal and clear out of the way. Now, before we move on to the soulmate, I'd like to mention something else, and that goes along with active listening, and that is support. Now, I don't mean that you're supporting somebody with money necessarily, but standing by them, letting them know that you will help them to get what they want and what is important to them. It might not even have anything to do with each other, but perhaps something outside of a relationship. That might be a little difficult for you to come up with a thought about that, Richard. I don't know. You're very good at supporting people. And that's why I'm asking you, how do you see that, supporting someone else?
I think the key thing is firstly to, as I said, in some manner do what you need to do to understand what they are saying and to acknowledge their situation and to, I guess, respond with compassion. And, you know, most people feel alone on so many levels. And if you take the time to connect with them on an emotional level, which we can all do, and to ask them how they feel about something rather than how they think, it's such an incredibly different thing to ask people. And when you start to connect in with their feelings and their emotions and to be open to the emotions that they are sending forth, because we're all transmitting these things all of the time, and frankly you can pick them up. I mean, when I'm working with people, with particularly with the soul healing sessions, I sit with my eyes closed most of the time, and because I'm feeling where that person is and what's going on for them, because you can feel those emotions if you're open to it, even though they might be on the other side of the world on a phone call connected with you, you can feel those emotions, those energies that are flowing in their bodies. So we can all do this. And when you connect with people in that empathetic way, then you can support them in powerful ways that most of us are unaware of until you start to practice these kind of things.
Yes, and you're very good at that. Now, if these things are not resolved in your own life, once you start thinking about this, if you're trying to encourage a soulmate to come into your life, and these things you haven't been working on, the relationship may or may not be successful if you're not open enough to what you might be doing wrong. And I will tell you, there is nothing so sad as a feeling of being alone when you are with a partner or a companion. It's a terrible feeling. And I know that there's a lot of that energy out there moving among people. So, what is a soulmate? Richard, I hope you don't think I'm putting you on a spot, because I'm going to give my answer to what a soulmate is. What is your thoughts about what a soulmate is?
My view of what a soulmate is someone that we have perhaps journeyed through many past lives with, that we have a connection with over perhaps many past life experiences. And it may be that we, the two souls, come from a soul group, a group of souls with a common interest. That's often the basis for souls coming together when they incarnate, but it isn't necessarily that. It can just be, as I say, that for whatever reason, the two souls have journeyed together through many lifetimes, perhaps being partners, perhaps being siblings, perhaps being parent-child in whichever way, and so on. And so, or maybe just friends. So there are many levels by which this can be expressed. And so when you meet someone with whom you have that kind of history in past lives, it's, you just feel this connection with that individual as if you know them already, is the sense that you have when this happens, in my experience.
Well, I would agree with that entirely. I remember meeting someone, a gentleman, at a time in my life when I really needed a friend. I was going through a divorce. It was a very unhappy time in my life. And it was so fascinating because I saw this image of what this gentleman meant to me in a past lifetime. He was a Franciscan monk, and I saw him in his garb, and I hadn't been dating for a long time. I had been married for a long time. And, of course, one of the things that goes through your mind when you're meeting new people outside of this relationship, you know, are they a safe person to be with? I was thinking of safety, and I just thought it was so interesting that when I asked that question, is this someone that I should spend time with? Would he be safe for me? And seeing that image was just so remarkable. And I might be spending a lot of time talking about these past lifetime memories, but I have to tell you, they are so important, and they give so much information, confidence, and in a way, hope. So I do agree with you entirely, Richard, that these soulmates are people that we have journeyed with in the past, and they have fulfilled a need. And I do believe that different soulmates had different skills, different things that they offer to us in the past. And if you're in a time of your life where you have a requirement or a need to enjoy and reunite with the kind of empathy, skill, compassion that this past life individual offered you in the past, there is something there that calls them. In other words, when you call into your life someone to fulfill a particular situation, you're not necessarily going to get the same individual. It would be if that individual is free, because some of them might be involved in a marriage or in another relationship. And so you can call people into your life. But there's another aspect of that also. And what that other aspect is, that before you came into this lifetime, you and a soulmate might have agreed that you would meet in this lifetime at a particular point in your life. Now, the skills that we are using, and we're talking about using the right side of your brain and connecting to a consciousness, you can actually connect with this consciousness of your soul before you came into this lifetime and see if there was an individual that you had agreed to meet with in this lifetime and perhaps about when. Don't you find that a fascinating thing, Richard?
It is fascinating. Mm.
And so how that works is when we decide that we're going to incarnate, we put together a plan, we ask those individuals that we have worked with in the past to join us, and they have the free will to join us or not to join us, but if they decide they're going to join us and we have this plan, this mission, we then come before what I call the board. It's a group of very wise souls, and we discuss our plan with them, and they don't try to change us, you know, to suggest something different, but what they do is talk about what some of the problems might be with that plan, which is they are there to serve us. And so one of the reasons why this is possible is because in the now, stepping outside of our present moment, we can reach past, present, and future moments in time. That's what the now is. And so we can actually and literally go back to that moment and discover if there is going to be a soulmate that we are going to be working with. We have some more information to cover, but what I'm going to do right now is suggest that if anybody wants to call in and perhaps talk about some of these experiences in their life, that we are covering, I think it would be wonderful to share with the audience some of those things that you have found along these lines. So, we have many soulmates. We only have one twin flame, but we have many soulmates. And I wanted to discuss that first, this idea of a soulmate, and that we can call them into our life. And usually what happens is those come who were on a vibratory level that is close to us at the time. And so it's another good thing to think about our vibration and our thoughts. And I don't know if you have any ideas about that, Richard. You know, using the word vibration can be very, a person might not know what that means, but they kind of know what the level of their thoughts are. Are they depressed a lot? Are they a happy person? Are they one who tries to help people? I think all this reflects in the vibration that they are working on. Do you have anything to add to that?
I would agree very much. And those things get communicated in so many ways. That emotional state is expressed in demeanor, in posture, in the way at times an individual might dress, how they look at other people, how their tone of voice is reflected, whether they speak in a monotone or whether there's a lot of color in the way that they speak. These things reflect that emotional state very powerfully, and we all pick up on these things. Whether we're consciously aware of them or not, we certainly pick up on them. What we do with them is another thing, because for most of us, these things remain largely unconscious. And so there are powerful cues that are sent forth about our emotional state when we express ourselves with others.
I just love it, the way you describe that. Some people call it, put it under a title of body language.
That's true.
Yeah. The science of body language. And so you might think about the signals. And I like that, Richard, the word that you use, the signals that we send out to people. Are we open and loving, compassionate? Do people feel comfortable in our circle? Do they feel like they have to defend themselves? Do they feel attacked by things that we have said? And all of this is, there are good things to look at, either from the standpoint of healing or from the standpoint of bringing in a soulmate that you are going to be compatible with at this moment and happy. Now, I think a lot of people who are looking for a soulmate or people who have had a relationship or a marriage that has not gone well. Do you think there's some truth in that, Richard?
That people that are looking for a soulmate are often people where they've had a bad relationship?
Or something that was disappointing, either in a marriage or in a friendship?
Certainly people are more open to be looking for a soulmate if they are in a relationship which is not working. I think that's true. And often we can trip over soulmates, you might say, when we are not looking.
I don't know. Have you tripped over a couple of them?
Well, I just, I have people email me about these things. You know, they trip over, literally, you know, they run into someone that they just feel this connection with, even though they have an existing, in some cases, quite good relationship, you know. So
I understand what you're saying. It's the emotional connection that you have to someone, and you might not necessarily be looking for a soulmate or looking for another opportunity because you're happy with where you are, but there is something there that you recognize.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm thinking myself, I don't know that I've had too many of those situations. None comes to mind at the moment, mm-hmm. For me, but I know exactly what you're saying. Now, I want to get to the situation where we're talking about twin flames. And looking at what people have to say about twin flames, some of it resonates with me and some doesn't. Shirley MacLaine wrote an interesting book, The Camino, on that trip to San Diego that she took. And she was walking a ley line, an energy line on the planet. And in walking along that line, she had many flashes of information that came to her, a lot of it about Atlantis, a lot of it about past lifetimes. But I want to mention something that she had in the book because I do resonate to this. And she's talking about a time in Atlantis where I might say the dark was very powerful. And the souls at that time were androgynous. They had two sides, the masculine and the feminine. And the dark suggested that individuals separate, that they separate those two sides and that they could worship the Creator twice as effectively. And I'm sure there was other promptings behind that besides those words. But Shirley saw an individual go through a vibrational setting. I'm not quite sure of the way this was set up, but she saw two individuals come out of that. Now, did it happen exactly along those lines? I'm not sure that that was the beginning of all of this. though I sense that that was done. How did you feel about that story, Richard?
Sorry, my mind wandered, Carolyn. Bring
That's
me back
okay.
to him.
Bring you back. I was describing something that Shirley MacLaine documented in her book.
On El Camino, yes.
Yeah. And she saw a lot of scenes taken back to Atlantis, and she saw the mechanics of where the androgynous souls were separated into the masculine and feminine.
Ah, okay. And I haven't read that book.
I didn't read the book, but I'm aware of what she said in it. And I've read excerpts of it. And of course,
well, certainly there's a fair bit of evidence from the work that we've done, Carolyn, to suggest that there is a lot of truth to that.
Well, I think it is too, and I brought that forward to see you using your intuition, how you felt about that, because I feel like that had some validity.
And really, for most people, this is where the twin soul arose, was the other half of that soul. It's not true for all, but for most, that's the case.
And when that happened, each went their own way, and they incarnated, and you might say they had the freedom to move wherever they chose, so that sometimes it became difficult to reunite, to cross paths again with the twin flame or the twin soul. Though what's happening now, since ascension is on the horizon, a lot of the souls are coming together. Now, some are aware that their twin soul or twin flame are on other planets. And, I mean, I've spoken to some people who are very aware. They're aware of their twin flame, and they know that they're not on Earth, that they're on another planet. But we are seeing more and more of the twin flames coming together. And many times they will come together with the idea of doing spiritual work to help humanity, to help people on the earth plane, and to bring forth abundance, love, hope, all of the virtues to make Earth a more beautiful place. So that is an interesting story, I think. I think there is validity to it. And I also think that it's one of the reasons why, at this point, many people are in a place of looking for something to complete themselves. And they sense that it is a moment to connect with those that they intended to be with. So I've given you a few tools without perhaps enumerating them. One of the tools, if you are able to go into meditation and go to that moment before you decided to come to Earth and see if there is an individual that you had made a, you might say, an agreement with or a contract with, that's very strong. And work on yourself, work on bringing up your vibrational level, so that when you do call in that soulmate, and you can call in that soulmate during meditation, place the call asking the universe to find that soulmate for you and to bring them into your life. You see, your higher self, that part, that entranceway into the soul monad, will respond if it is for your growth of your soul. And they have the power to put beings in your path, to put situations in your path so that you have the opportunity to meet the one that you are calling for. So there's several things that people can do, and I hope this has been helpful to those who were asking the question. And I have been getting mail about this, and I thought the radio show would be a good place to discuss these options. So, Richard, we have 5 minutes before the show is over. Is there anything that you would like to add to this?
I think these forces are very strong for a lot of people in this time. People on a spiritual journey have some awareness of the notion of soulmates and twin flames and so on, but perhaps not really have understood these distinctions. I think a lot of people confuse these two things, and it's perhaps not that difficult to confuse them in terms of experience, because the draw, the attraction of a soulmate can be very powerful, and so it can confuse you unless you stop and examine it. And it may well be that your twin flame, your twin soul, if you will, is present in another dimension or on another planet, has taken another path and isn't actually here. So you may, in this lifetime, not have a path where you will connect with your twin flame. So there are many options here, and it's important that you don't kind of lock yourself into how things should be. Put this desire, if you will, to find your twin flame in this lifetime and to reconnect with them and so on. It may simply not be possible to do that. And yet there are many satisfying relationship possibilities that can be in play for you. And you may indeed have, as Carolyn was indicating earlier, made a pre-birth agreement to connect with a soulmate in this life. So it's important that you don't kind of put yourself in a corner, and also be clear about these distinctions and what these things mean. So there are just a few comments I would add, Carolyn.
Why, thank you, Richard. I do appreciate that. We only have 2 minutes left on the show, and I'd like for you just to mention to people, if they're not getting our emails, where can they sign up for our emails?
Yes, they can go to our main website, the 2012countdown.com, and there is a panel at the top and the bottom of every page on that site where you can enter your name and email address, and then click on the link in the email that gets sent to you to complete your enrollment on the newsletter list, and so you will receive our emails after you do that. So that's the way to join our lists. And I know some people have found that they've been, for example, removed from our lists by others when they have sent emails that we have sent. They forwarded them on to others. And I would just mention that if you do this, and I know many people do, remember to delete the cancel and update options off the bottom of that email, because I receive emails from lots of people saying, I didn't ask you to remove me. And I assure you, I don't take anybody off the list in those sort of circumstance. Extremely rare when I delete somebody off the list. They have to annoy me a lot. And usually it's because you forwarded that email to someone who doesn't want to receive the email from you. They find the cancel link on the bottom and they click on it and unsubscribe. Well, it certainly stops the email coming to them because you don't get it to forward to them. But that's not your intention. So just make sure you take those off the bottom of the email. I get probably, a couple of emails a week about this. So just bear it in mind.
Well, Richard, we're at the end of the show. And I would just like to add that a lot of information is on the website that you just talked about. But we also have a website with the rightbrainmagic.com. And you might want to go there and look at this because there's a lot of great information there. So, Richard, thank you so much for sharing this time with me and our listeners. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Carolyn. It's a pleasure.
And so for now, it is good night until next week.
Good night, everyone.